Welcome to today's deep dive. I'm really glad you're here with us because chances are you're probably listening to this while multitasking.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. Maybe you're commuting or, walking the dog.
Yeah.
Or maybe you're just taking a quick break and staring at a screen.
Which is pretty much all of us these days.
Exactly. And if you are looking at a screen, you know exactly what the modern visual experience feels like. It's just this constant, exhausting demand for immediate delivery.
Yeah, it's like visual fast food.
Yes.
Yeah.
You swipe, you see a picture, your brain immediately categorizes it, and then you ask a split-second question before demanding the next hit.
It's entirely transactional. I mean, we process the visual data, we extract whatever tiny dopamine hit we need,
Yeah.
and then we just discard it.
We toss it right out.
Right. We've basically trained ourselves to be these incredibly efficient, but, incredibly impatient consumers of visual media.
We're consuming hundreds of images a minute. Sometimes we don't even consciously register them. It's just this frantic habit, this endless scrolling.
Yeah, our brains have been really heavily conditioned to demand a story, and we want that story pre-chewed for us.
That's a great way to put it. Pre-chewed. Think about it. If an image of a wild animal pops up on your feed, your immediate instinct isn't to just look at it.
No, of course not. Your instinct is to ask for the plot.
Right. What is this animal hunting? Or what is haunting it? Is it fighting? Is it running away? We want action. We basically want conflict.
And the irony there is that this relentless demand for a narrative hook actually makes the images completely disposable.
Wait, how so?
Well, if you come across an image and there's no immediate conflict, no loud story for your brain to instantly latch onto, your thumb just keeps swiping.
Oh, I see. You just passed right by it.
Exactly,
Yeah.
because it doesn't give you that quick fix. We are intensely conditioned to reject anything that asks us to just rest.
Which is exactly why today's mission is so fascinating. You and I are going to unpack how a single, entirely static image can act as a really powerful antidote to all of this modern visual noise.
I am so excited for this one.
Me too. So we are diving into the deeply detailed technical specifications and the really intimate conceptual notes from the artist Jero Duke.
We're looking at his August 2024 watercolor painting, which is simply titled 18 Giraffa.
And Duke has engineered a piece of art that fundamentally rebels against our whole scrolling culture, right?
He really has. It's designed to force the human eye to just halt. It actually demands a pause.
Which is hard for us to do.
It is. But this painting completely refuses to deliver that pre-chewed, action-packed narrative we've all grown so addicted to.
But, if you want to create an image that actually forces someone to stop their frantic momentum, you can't just paint a pretty picture.
No, not at all.
It requires a really specific kind of environment to forge that kind of radical stillness. So to understand the power of this piece, we need to look at the massive physical contrast between where this silence was manufactured and where it was ultimately consumed.
Yeah, the physical birthplace of this piece, according to Duke's notes, is Whittier, California. Specifically, it was created in the artist's studio workshop in August of 2024.
Now, when I think of a studio workshop, I picture this very isolated, highly controlled space. I mean, it's pretty much the total opposite of a public arena.
Exactly. You really have to imagine it as an intimate, quiet, physical
A
laboratory.
laboratory, yeah.
It's a space dedicated entirely to slow creation, far away from the glare of an audience or, the noise of a city. This is the origin point.
Where it all started.
Right. It's where the quietness of the artwork was physically built, layer by layer, in a state of absolute, uninterrupted focus. The environment itself is literally part of the medium.
Which makes perfect sense for a quiet watercolor. But the destination, that's what gives this story its incredible tension.
Oh, absolutely.
Because this painting didn't just go to a quiet gallery down the street in California. Between August and September of that very same year, 18 Giraffa was exhibited at the Arxpo Boxy and Dakulova Gallery.
And that's all the way in Dubai, in the United Arab Emirates.
Right. It is just this astronomical conceptual leap. You are taking something born in solitary confinement
Yeah.
and dropping it into, well, one of the most hyperkinetic environments on the planet.
It's quite the culture shock for a painting.
Seriously. I'm trying to visualize that collision of realities. I mean, Dubai is the absolute pinnacle of high-speed, hyper-modern metropolitan energy.
Yeah, you have glass, steel, extreme luxury.
International commerce, constant unending motion, putting a still, quiet watercolor of a single animal into that environment. It feels like taking a completely silent, meditating monk and dropping him right in the middle of a frantic stock exchange trading floor.
Okay, that analogy perfectly captures the friction here.
Right. It's just jarring.
It is. Exhibiting profound quiet in a city defined by ultimate speed isn't just a simple change of venue. And ensuring that this profound sense of stillness actually survives the journey.
Yeah, ensuring it can command a room in a place as visually loud as Dubai.
Exactly. That requires way more than just a nice concept. Going back to your analogy, if you put a monk on a trading floor, he needs impenetrable mental armor to maintain his meditation.
So how does a painting get that kind of armor? Because, you know, if I take a delicate little sketch on a piece of printer paper into a loud room, the energy of the room is just going to swallow it whole.
Oh, for sure. And that is precisely why the defense mechanism of this artwork isn't just theoretical.
Okay.
It's literal physical chemistry. The armor begins on a microscopic level, starting with the very foundation of the materials he used.
Let's actually look at those materials, because I have to admit, when I first read the artist's technical sheet, I was a bit lost.
It's pretty technical.
Yeah, the notes list a 15 by 22 inch watercolor painted with Daniel Smith brand paints on 640 gram arches, cold pressed, rough grain paper.
And it was based on a photograph found on the web, right?
Right. And I'll be honest, my initial reaction was to just gloss over all of this. I mean, these are incredibly dry manufacturing facts.
They seem like it at first glance, yeah.
Like, how does the exact gram weight of a piece of paper actually dictate the emotional climate of a painting? Paper is just the vehicle for the image, isn't it?
It sounds like a totally mundane supply list, but it's actually the blueprint for the artwork's emotional gravity. You have to stop thinking of paper as this flat, invisible vehicle.
Okay, how should I think about it?
Imagine that 640 gram rough grain paper as an uneven, rugged topography. If you were to put it under a microscope, you wouldn't see a flat surface at all.
What would I see?
You'd see miniature mountain ranges and deep valleys.
Oh, wow. So it has actual tactile geography to it. It's not like the glossy screen of a phone.
Far from it. Now, add the specific chemistry of the medium. Duke uses these Daniel Smith watercolors, which are really well known for their heavy mineral pigments.
Okay.
When the artist applies a wash of water and color over this really rough paper, a physical reaction occurs, and it's called granulation.
Granulation. What does that actually do to the image?
Well, because the pigment particles are heavy, they don't just sit smoothly on the surface. They physically sink and settle into those tiny microscopic valleys in the paper.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so the water evaporates and the heavy minerals are left trapped in the texture. It creates this speckled, organic, deeply textured look. But the really crucial part is the weight of the paper itself.
Yeah.
640 grams is exceptionally thick. It's basically like cardboard.
Which means it can take a serious beating from the water.
Exactly. When you flood thinner paper with heavy watercolor washes, it buckles, it bends, you know, it warps under the stress.
Right, it gets all wavy.
Yeah. But this 640 gram rough grain paper absorbs massive amounts of water and pigment while remaining completely flat and unyielding. It stays stoic.
Wow.
So the granulation of those heavy pigments settling into the valleys, combined with the unbending physical strength of the thick paper, it creates a structural architectural base for contemplation. It literally gives the silence of the painting actual tangible weight.
That completely flips how I view the technical specs. The physical object itself is constructed out of heavy, unmoving materials.
Yeah.
It really is literal chemistry serving emotion.
That's exactly it.
The artist is demanding a certain pace from the materials, which in turn demands a certain pace from whoever is looking at it in that Dubai gallery.
Right. The materials are never an afterthought in a piece like this. They are the absolute foundation of the emotional architecture.
Makes total sense.
And once you establish that immovable, rugged terrain, you set the stage. The next vital decision is what the artist actually chooses to place onto that stage.
Or, you know, maybe more importantly, what he deliberately chooses to leave out.
Yes.
Because Duke's notes give us a practical manual for how he executed the image. And he breaks down a very clear division between how he treated the background versus how he treated the animal itself.
Let's look at the background first. The notes mention the use of broad washes of water and color.
Right, the broad washes.
By using those broad washes, he allows the water to dictate the movement. The pigment flows freely across that rough terrain we just talked about.
So it's not super controlled.
Not rigidly, no.
Yeah.
It creates a deeply enveloping atmosphere. You get a sky that transitions seamlessly from a soft pink, bleeding into orange, and finally fading into a deep blue.
Wow, that sounds beautiful.
It is. There are no hard, rigid lines in the sky. It's entirely fluid and airy. and it creates this incredible sense of depth and a climate of retreat.
But then you look at the giraffe itself, and it's the total opposite of fluid and airy.
Oh, completely.
Duke notes that the animal is rendered with a highly dense tonal load. It is essentially reduced to a dark silhouette. There are no hyper-realistic spots painted on it.
None at all.
There are no detailed eyes, no individual hairs. It's just a dense, dark shape against that flowing sky.
And this is where we see a masterclass in visual synthesis. Duke is employing a technique of hinting rather than detailing. He's deliberately withholding information.
I love that. You know, this technique really reminds me of reading a brilliant novel as opposed to reading an instruction manual.
Oh, that's a perfect comparison.
Right. Because if a writer spends 3 pages describing every single chair, rug, and light bulb in a room, it just gets tedious. It feels like a textbook.
Yeah, you lose interest.
Exactly. Yeah. But when an author gives you just 2 or 3 evocative details and leaves the rest unsaid, the subtext traps you. Your brain absolutely loves a vacuum of information, and it just rushes in to fill in the blanks.
It really does. By giving us a silhouette instead of a photorealistic giraffe, the artist is forcing our brains to do the work.
So the silence of the silhouette is highly interactive.
Very much so. Instead of just passively receiving data, you are projecting your own understanding of the animal onto the dark shape.
But utilizing a silhouette has to raise a massive technical challenge, right?
Definitely.
I mean, if you take an incredibly complex, massive animal like a giraffe and you reduce it to a flat, dark shape, how do you prevent it from looking lifeless?
That is a huge risk. It could just look like a dark piece of paper cut out with scissors and pasted onto a pretty sunset. It could look entirely flat.
Right. So how does he avoid that?
To prevent it from looking like a pasted-on sticker, the artist relies on the architecture of visual stability. He achieves this through a geometric anchor that we can visualize as an invisible cross.
An invisible cross. Let's unpack the mechanics of that. How does our brain read geometry as stability?
Well, think about it structurally. You have the towering, immense verticality of the giraffe's long neck and legs.
Yeah, that's an incredibly strong vertical line dominating the frame.
Exactly. And that vertical line is anchored directly against the diffuse horizontal spread of the terrain and the sky.
Okay, so it's that intersection. You know, it makes me think of the engineering of a skyscraper or even something organic like a massive oak tree.
I see where you're going with this.
When you see a towering vertical column plunging down into a wide, expansive horizontal base, the human eye just instinctively recognizes that geometry is unshakable. The roots spread wide horizontally so the trunk can stand tall vertically.
That intersection of the commanding vertical and the expansive horizontal is exactly what gives the silhouette its life and its mass.
Wow. So the shape itself creates the weight.
Yes. It makes the animal look incredibly grounded and immovable, even without a single photorealistic detail to give it three-dimensional volume. It doesn't need spots or shading to feel heavy and alive. The geometry basically does all the heavy lifting.
That's brilliant. And sitting right next to that towering vertical presence in the painting is the sun.
Right.
Duke's notes describe it as a circle of almost pure color. But it's not acting the way a sun normally acts in a painting, is it?
Not at all. It doesn't function as a realistic light source. If it were a realistic sun, it would be casting accurate directional shadows across the terrain.
That's yeah, and bouncing specific highlights off the back of the giraffe's neck.
But it isn't doing any of that. Instead, Duke refers to the sun as a silent interlocutor.
A silent interlocutor. So a partner in a dialogue, but one that communicates entirely without language.
Exactly. The sun and the giraffe exist in this silent visual conversation. The pure, bright circle of the sun provides a necessary emotional and visual counterbalance to the heavy, dark, vertical silhouette of the animal.
So it's just there for balance.
Yeah, it's placed there purely for compositional weight and harmony. It anchors the sky the exact same way the giraffe anchors the earth. It's there for resonance, not for, you know, meteorological accuracy.
The artist actually left a very specific note about this non-realistic approach, addressing any future works he might do regarding the animal.
He did, yes. Duke states really clearly that if he ever decides to revisit the subject and perhaps explore adding more light and shadow to the animal's body, it will never be for the sake of realism.
Interesting.
He has absolutely zero interest in providing encyclopedic data about what a giraffe looks like anatomically.
So we are never going to get the textbook version of this painting. We aren't going to see the individual spots mapped out or the muscles highlighted for educational purposes.
Never. Any detail added in the future would be purely to create what he calls vibration.
Vibration.
He wants to intensify the visual energy and the tension within the pictorial space. The goal is always energetic resonance, never the delivery of cold scientific facts.
By deliberately stripping away the noise of realism, and by refusing to give us the encyclopedic data our brains usually demand, he's doing so much more than just making a stylistic choice, isn't he?
Oh, 100%.
He is elevating this animal from a simple decorative image into a profound ethical and philosophical statement.
Which brings us right to the core philosophy driving this work. You know, throughout art history, animals have frequently been relegated to mere decorative elements.
Oh, yeah.
They've been painted as hunting trophies or as exotic curiosities to hang on a wall or simply as aesthetically pleasing shapes meant to match the furniture in a room. Jairo Duque fundamentally rejects that entire history.
He absolutely refuses to use the giraffe as a prop.
Right. He elevates the giraffe to the level of a poetic and ethical subject in its own right. He actually describes the animal in this painting as a watchman of the landscape.
A watchman.
Think about where it's positioned. It resides exactly on the border between the solid earth and the fluid sky.
That imagery carries so much quiet authority. It's just standing guard, observing the silence.
And consider how it occupies that space. It's a massive, towering presence, yet it imposes itself upon the landscape entirely without violence.
Oh, that's beautiful. Imposing without violence.
It doesn't disrupt the earth. It anchors it. It's completely alien to human noise and totally removed from our frantic, manufactured need for action, conflict, and constant narrative.
It just exists.
Exactly. In its silent verticality, it serves as a powerful reminder of both the immense grandeur and the intense fragility of wildlife.
That concept is just incredibly striking to me, and this philosophical stance is exactly why this painting retains its power no matter where it hangs. It brings us right back to that gallery in Dubai.
It really does. The subject matter is a giraffe, which is native to Africa. But the sprawling, fluid sky, the heavy structural quietness that is physically built into the chemistry of the cold-pressed paper, the silent dialogue with the sun, these elements resonate universally.
Right.
The stillness completely transcends the specific geography of the animal.
When a patron in that hyper-modern, bustling Dubai gallery actually stops walking, you know, lowers their phone, and stands totally still in front of this rugged, heavy watercolor, that physical act of stotching is the ultimate victory of the artwork.
Oh, without a doubt. The contained color and the synthetic, reduced form are basically extending a formal invitation for you to pause.
And when you accept that invitation, that slow, deliberate contemplation isn't just an exercise in art appreciation.
No, it transforms into an actual gesture of respect, a profound respect toward the animal itself, toward the natural world that it represents, and really toward the lost vital art of simply being still in a noisy world.
What an incredible emotional and conceptual journey this has been today. You and I started by looking at the quiet, isolated focus of a studio workshop in Whittier, California.
We really went across the globe.
We did. We followed 18 Giraffa all the way to the buzzing high-speed heart of Dubai. And through that journey, we unpacked how something as seemingly mundane as 640 grams of rugged paper combined with the grounding geometry of a dark silhouette against a horizontal landscape can act as a massive, powerful rebellion against our hyper-stimulated culture.
It's a phenomenal example of how literal chemistry, masterful technique, and deep ethical philosophy can weave together to just force us to put down our screens, pause, and engage with the world with a little less hurry.
We talked a little earlier about that beautiful concept of the silent interlocutor, the bright sun in the painting that sits beside the watchman.
Yes.
It doesn't cast realistic light. It doesn't ask for anything. It simply provides the emotional and visual counterbalance the giraffe needs to stand tall and stable. Mm. It just exists in perfect silent dialogue.
That concept of the silent interlocutor is deeply powerful, and it leaves us with an essential question for you to consider as you step away from this deep dive and, you know, back into your routine.
Yeah.
In a modern life that is almost entirely driven by loud narratives, constant action, and the endless, exhausting demand for your attention, who or what serves as your silent interlocutor?
What is that quiet, non-descriptive presence in your own world? What is the thing, the space, or the practice that doesn't demand a single narrative from you, but simply provides the emotional and visual balance you need to stand immovable amidst all the noise?
It's a really great question to ask yourself.
It is certainly something worth contemplating the next time you feel the urge to frantically swipe for the next distraction. Thank you so much for joining us for this session. It is always a privilege to unpack these incredible concepts with you, and we hope you carry a little bit of that quiet watchman's stillness with you into the rest of your week.